These are the readings for the next to last day, liturgically, of this year. Tomorrow, and then Sunday, we have the first Sunday in Advent. Now, it's very helpful, actually important, to have our own spiritual life enter into this rhythm, because this is the rhythm of the church's life. Those parts of it which have sort of become part of the whole overall culture, like Christmas. You know, I don't think, how many people up there? Today's Black Friday, right? So how many people are up there fighting over whatever? But there wouldn't be. See, that all has to do with getting ready for the birth of the Lord. And so this first reading, the most important part of that reading, as you remember, all these different animals, creatures. And then finally, those are periods in world history. You know, I think I've done this before. We still do this. You know, England is a lion, right? America is a tall fellow with, Uncle Sam, you know, with his hat, and the other nations. So we still do this kind of stuff. But anyway, you see, the part that I want to look at for a moment. Thrones were set up, and the Ancient One, that's how the text says, the Ancient of Days, you know, beyond all time. No matter what happened, whenever, he was already ancient. His clothing was snow bright, hair on his head was white as wool, his throne was flaming fire, and his wheels a burning fire, and a surging stream of fire flowed out from where he sat. Power, purifying power. Thousands upon thousands were ministering to him, and myriads upon myriads attended him. That's God, right? It's God the Father, as we're going to see. So the court was convened, the books opened, and then from the first of the arrogant words which the horn spoke until the beast was slain, and its body thrown into the fire. In other words, evil is over. And then, as the visions continued during the night, I saw one like a son of man. Now, what could that possibly mean? Barinosh, the son of a man. Man's quintessentially human. He's a son of man. And when he reached the Ancient One and was presented before him, he received dominion, glory, kingship. Nations and people of every language serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that shall not be taken away. His kingship shall not be destroyed. Now, what is the title that our Lord uses most frequently about himself? Son of Man. And this is what he's referring to. I'm this one. But it means both. See, quintessentially human. I pointed this out before, how Semitic languages do this sort of a thing. The example always comes to me was Saddam Hussein. This is the mother of all battles. You remember when he said that? Maybe you didn't, but I mean, having lived over there and heard all these Semitic expressions, it struck me, you know, this is the mother the greatest and the source of all that, or it wasn't. But that's rhetoric. But now, you see, this Son of Man, and he's going to receive everlasting dominion. Nations and people of every language serve him. That's the Son of Man. Now, what our Lord adds to it, recorded three times in the synoptic tradition, the Son of Man is going to be turned over to sinners who are going to beat him, torture him, and kill him. And on the third day, he will rise. And so, that's the way our Lord talked about himself. But he inserted between the Son of Man and the glory, the passion. The Son of Man, she will be handed over to sinners, and they will torture him and mock him and finally kill him. And on the third day, he will rise. Now, can you imagine the disciples hearing this and trying to figure out what does all this mean? They knew Son of Man because they went to the synagogue and they heard these readings. But the rest, and why Jesus loved that term, because while it did speak of his dignity, his power, his glory, it also spoke of his humanity. He's quintessentially human. Nobody is as human as Jesus. And that's, I thought maybe you'd like to, because it's going to be coming up now when we get into Lent, the predictions of the Passion and so forth will all involve the Son of Man. In the Gospel, how our Lord can help us with these things, huh? So, remember now, we're looking for the eschatological moment, right? But the eschatological moment is the ultimate moment. Now, one of these moments will be ultimate in time as well. But the eschaton is not just the last one. It's the ultimate moment. We've passed through some. The most outstanding eschatological moment so far in the history of the world is the death of Jesus. So he's telling us, just take a look at the fig tree and the other trees. And they have buds, and then they have leaves and fruit. And you know how to figure that out. Well, look and see where we are in my Father's plan for the existence of the world. And I don't mean, a lot of, who was the fellow? Jimmy Swaggart, wasn't his name? A preacher? You don't remember? You do remember. He had it all worked out. He was wrong. But he was at least trying to take it seriously. But you can't figure things out by saying, we're at this point now, and that's the beast. And then, you need divine enlightenment for that. That's all there is for that. Tomorrow, we'll finish off with Daniel. And we have the next few verses in Luke. That's the last advice. And it is, don't let these days close in on you like a trap. Be smart. Look and see what's going on. And so we should, and we should pray. Pray for this world. And the center of these events is the Holy Land. God, who created the whole world, took that land and gave it to Abraham. And it's still theirs. up and down, you know the way things go. I mean, conquered and then reconquered. And that's where much of this will take place. When? But we're living in an ultimate moment. I don't think it's the last moment. And for the first time, all of the world is involved in the same event. It took radio and television and airplanes and all that sort of stuff to make us one world. You remember Wendell Willkie's book, One World? Maybe you don't. I mean, you're not that young. I mean. But anyway, now with radio and television and all that sort of stuff, we are one world. You can sit in our living room and see the result of the mess in the Philippines. And we can be touched by that and try to help them. And so the Lord is Lord of this world. It's going to be a very interesting advent. If you're sensitive and you live through this time with the church, you will receive enlightenment of what's going on and how to help your families. Is this the last moment? I don't think so. But it's an ultimate moment. The whole world is gathering to be on one side or the other, right? And Islam is one of the agents, the catalyst, getting this all organized. So it's a significant advent in the history of the world coming up. And we have to go to the Lord and say, what do you want me to be doing through this advent? To genuinely celebrate the presence among us of God Himself as a human being. Let's get it right, get it straight. The idea, you know, and we're probably the worst in the world. Christmas is for Thanksgiving dinners or turkey dinners and giving presents and. Those are supposed to be the joy of knowing that we have Emmanuel. We have God with us. That's what it's for. And it's supposed to be liturgical. Well, go tell Mr. Macy that, you know. Co-opted. Of course we should celebrate. We should be the happiest people in the world. We feed on the body and blood of God Himself every day. But as we relive this, the mysteries are all present again to us. And every feast is a mystery. It's an outworking of the plan of God. So start to pray for this poor world. And so that Christmas this year is genuinely a celebration of Emmanuel. God is with us, among us, physically among us, right here.